Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Lindsay Farrell. She's Executive Director of the Connecticut Working Families Party. Lindsay, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe briefly tell our listeners, as you have in the past, about the work of the Working Families Party here in Connecticut, both your electoral work and your issue work.
Sure. Well, the Working Families Party was founded about 10 years ago, actually almost 11 years ago, in Connecticut to fight on economic justice issues that affect working class and middle class families. You know, kitchen table issues such as decent wages, access to benefits like health care, access to the affordable housing, decent retirement, dignity in the workplace, that kind of thing. And we have pursued that agenda in two ways. One is through an electoral strategy, running candidates that support those things or supporting major party candidates that support those things, and also making sure that we do our part of the work on the issues in terms of fighting for legislative victories at the state level and at the municipal level to make sure that the families are protected.
Thanks for that, Lindsay. You've accomplished quite a bit at the state level, including a victory last year, the paid sick leave law, the first statewide law like that in the United States, higher tax rates on millionaires, and other important advances in public policy. One of the things, as you talked about, that you do is cross-endorse candidates. There's a disturbing development in the state legislature now where a bill has been proposed. It's already passed committee in the Connecticut State Legislature that would prevent your party and other minor parties from engaging in cross endorsements in Connecticut elections. That bill is SB 1146, as I've read it in recent articles about it. But Lindsay, maybe you could tell us a bit more about what may seem like an obscure piece of legislation floating through the state legislature, but this could have profound impact on your work, right?
Well, very much so. I want to start with with what you started with, which is talking about the issues that we have fought for. You know, you mentioned specifically paid sick leave, which is something that I think most working people relate to. You know, you get sick, your kid gets sick, your spouse gets sick, and the choice between having to meet your professional obligations and the obligations that you have to your family or to yourself to take care of the health of yourself or your family, that's a terrible dilemma. And so we push for paid sick leave legislation. You know, neither of the major parties were advocating for that in a meaningful way. And so as a minor party, we saw an important role for ourselves to push for that because it was important to so many working people that we talk to on a regular basis. In American politics, there is a strong history of minor parties pushing for things outside of the immediate political debate that ultimately become so important to the American electorate, whether it's women's suffrage or the weekend and the 40-hour work week or the abolition of slavery or any of these. Are, you know, these are all things that came from minor parties. So we're now looking at a piece of legislation that would marginalize minor parties in Connecticut by limiting their choices in terms of letting them nominate the candidates that they feel best represent their values. And that only means a more limited discourse in terms of the issues in Connecticut.
What's the ostensible motivation here behind those who've proposed this? And certainly, you know, name some names and what other interests are behind this move. You know, presumably to the advantage of the major political parties, both Democrats and Republicans.
You'd have to ask them. I've checked my crystal ball, and I haven't come up with anything. You know, we as a minor party, Connecticut Working Families Party has worked very hard to help elect the major party candidates that we've supported. And I think we've had a reasonable amount of success with that, whether it's, you know, in 2008 with Jim Hines running for Congress, or Dan Malloy running for governor in 2010. You know, we are focused on the values of the party, and that, again, is access to benefits like health care, fair wages, and a decent quality of life for people who work for a living. So, you know, those are the things that we talk about with voters, and those are the things that I think resonate when we are out there campaigning for folks. You know, I don't know why we would want to limit that kind of an impact on our electoral system, where issues are what frame the conversation about who we vote for.
What is the rationale that you're hearing from the politicians who support this legislation?
What we've heard from them is that cross-endorsement confuses voters, or that it provides an opportunity for super PACs to take advantage of the system, to game the system by creating fake minor parties. You know, I think voters are more intelligent than that. Voters know who they're voting for, and they know what party stands for. You know, a Republican who is cross-endorsed by the Right to Life Party means something very different from a Republican who is cross-endorsed by the Libertarian Party, and voters understand that difference. But the, you know, more importantly, the access to the ballot is what is really, really important for voters, and people want to see information on their ballot that helps them make a decision about who they're supporting.
And, you know, I guess just to talk about the practical matter of what's at stake, you know, your support for Democratic gubernatorial candidate Daniel Malloy, his margin of victory was on your party line, the Working Families Party line. It was a relatively close election, right? Maybe you could talk about, what you know, for a practical matter, how that affected your standing in terms of, you know, wielding some influence in the state legislature, even though Working Families, you know, doesn't have a lot of representatives in the House or Senate and up in Hartford. But that election and the cross-endorsement process really, you know, gave working men and women in the state some clout that they might not otherwise have.
Well, it was a very close election, Scott. You know, as you recall, Dan Malloy won the race for governor by about 6,000 votes. He got about 26,000 votes on our line. There were folks who voted for Dan Malloy on the Working Families Party line because they felt like that was the ballot line that best represented the values that they have in terms of economic justice issues. So, you know, without extensive polling and exit polls and a whole lot of mumbo jumbo and research, it's hard to know exactly what people would have done on their own with or without the cross endorsement. But, you know, part of why we endorsed Dan Malloy was because he was a strong advocate for paid sick leave, which was an important issue for our organization, and a milestone in terms of adjusting public policy to meet the demands of the economy that we're living in now, where all parents in a household work, and that's just the reality that we're dealing with. And I think that people recognize that Dan Malloy won in part because he was good on issues like that, like paid sick days and other progressive, you know, issues that matter to working families. But the other side is that, you know, he realized that he won because of the support on those issues. In such a close race with so many votes on the working families line, he saw that things like fair taxes, paid sick days mattered to voters, and so he took action on them once he was in office. And so, you know, we recognize his leadership on that, and he recognized that that was important to voters.
So what are you doing now to counter this? And, you know, it's hard for me to know. I'm not close and don't talk a lot with legislators up in Hartford, but does this bill that's now passed committee that would derail your use of cross-endorsement in future elections? Does it have a chance to pass both the House and Senate and be signed into law? What is it that you're hearing? You know, what kind of feedback have you got from the governor? Of course, he'll play an important role whether he signs or vetoes the legislation if it does pass.
Sure. I mean, we're taking this effort very seriously. We've seen attempts by both major parties around the country to curtail the influence of certain parts of the electorate in our elections pass legislatures and become law around the country in different states. So we have to be vigilant on that. I think that we have a good shot at defeating this in Connecticut, partly because voters care about the choices that they have. You know, over 80,000 voters in Connecticut chose to vote on a minor party line for a cross-endorsed major party candidate in 2012. You know, over 80,000 voters. That is a significant chunk of people who are engaging in our democracy, and they shouldn't be marginalized. But the other thing is that, you know, politicians understand the electoral system, and a lot of politicians in Connecticut have taken cross-endorsement, whether they've taken the Working Families Party line or the Independent Party line or some other cross-endorsement. You know, they understand that when they do that, they are attracting a new crop of voters that they might not have had a relationship with otherwise, and they don't want to give that up. So I think we'll be able to defeat this effort this year.
I'm wondering, because I've heard of a similar move in New York State, where there's a corruption case where a Democrat who was trying to be endorsed by the Republican Party for a mayoral run in New York City got caught, you know, trying to bribe his way into that position. You know, that made headlines not that long ago. And then there's a move in Albany where the Working Families also operates, your sister political party there, mm-hmm. in New York State, where you know, they're facing a similar set of circumstances for different reasons, apparently. But maybe you could tell us about the relationship with what's happening in New York, if there is any.
Right. Well, first of all, the reasons are probably ultimately the same, in that major parties don't always want to have to accommodate minor parties, and that's just the nature of politics. But in New York, the attack on cross-endorsement is particularly ridiculous because, you know, it's a corruption scandal. That means that we should deal with the influence of money and power in our electoral system. We've done that in Connecticut with the Clean Elections Program, which has been a great success and has done a lot to mitigate the influence of special interests and big money in our political system. You know, somebody tried to buy a cross endorsement in New York. If they had tried to buy their son a job, would we outlaw jobs? No. Obviously, the solution is not the right response to the problem. And they have a strong campaign right now in New York for a clean elections program similar to what we have in Connecticut. I think they now have very clear evidence of why it's necessary. I hope that's the direction they go. But, you know, an attack on cross-endorsement doesn't make any more sense there than it does here. It's a problem in search of a solution in search of a problem. And it's not going to actually make the system more accessible for average voters.
Lindsay, maybe wanted to get on to another topic you're working on in a moment here, but maybe we can conclude our discussion of the challenge to cross-endorsement by telling our listeners what you think their role is here in this, in terms of Connecticut voters and Connecticut activists who may be listening.
You know, people should reach out. I always say this: people should reach out to their elected officials and tell them what they think is right. You know, cross endorsements provide more choices for voters. It limits the necessity of minor parties to be destructive and to run spoiler candidates to do something meaningful in an election. and it gives voters the ability to express their values when they are outside of major parties without, you know, casting a vote against their own interests. So people should just talk to your state rep, talk to your state senator, and say that you want to make sure that you have all of your election rights, and that means protecting cross endorsement.
Are speaking tonight with Lindsay Farrell. She's executive director of the Connecticut Working Families Party. And Lindsay, I wanted to maybe talk about another issue you may be working on. I'm not sure what kind of priority is it, but we've heard that the Koch brothers, who are famous for their support of climate change denying and all manner of regulation on banks and you name it, they're against it in terms of some of the progressive agenda that you work on and some of the issues we cover on this program, that they are, there's talk that they may be bidding on purchasing the Tribune Company, which owns the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, as well as the Hartford Current, close to home here. I've read something on the MoveOn.org website, at least one of your members is endorsing some kind of activity here in the state to confront that head on. What can you tell us?
Well, you described the problem pretty fairly. I mean, the Koch brothers are this right-wing duo. They're infamous for funding the Tea Party, for funding, you know, candidates like Scott Walker and his effort to dismantle labor unions and the rights of workers in Wisconsin. You know, whether the issue is deregulating our telecommunications system or scaling back the rights of workers in terms of their wages, or even social issues such as women's healthcare access and things like that. I mean, the Koch brothers are always there at ground zero attacking the rights of people. And they are now trying to buy the Tribune Company. Part of it is because they want to buy the LA Times, and through some trick of corporate organization, they aren't able to buy just one paper. They have to buy a whole series of them. And to do that, they're willing to buy 12 newspapers around the country. We should be very nervous about this in Connecticut, and people should speak out to make sure that this doesn't happen. You know, the Koch brothers have a serious, serious direct agenda. It is in favor of corporations, against working people, against consumers, and if they own news outlets, then those news outlets will produce a product that carries the message they want, and we have to be careful about that. So the petition that we have online right now has almost 3,000 signatures, which is a good amount, and I encourage people to find it on signon.org. Tell the Hartford Current, don't sell to the Koch brothers. And this should be stopped because it's not just about the immediate purchase of our news outlets. It's about the message that they convey for years afterwards.
And what influence do you think citizens can have on a business transaction such as the Koch brothers' bid to buy the Tribune Company? There's a lot of people say, hey, you know, the average citizen has nothing to do with it. But how do you think people can influence what happens here?
People can definitely, it's hard. It clearly is hard, but people can definitely have an influence. You know, one of the things that the Koch brothers are notorious for is their funding and support of ALEC, which has been a right-wing, pro-business, lobbying policy organization that has developed the model legislation around the country to deregulate the utilities and attack wage laws and things like that. And in the last year, we've seen a lot of boycotts and public relations attacks on the companies that fund ALEC. And most of them, when called out publicly for their funding of this right-wing group that's bad for consumers and bad for workers, have withdrawn their support. They don't fund ALEC anymore. If enough attention is paid and the stockholders are afraid that they're going to lose too much business and too much revenue, we can see change.
Well, I like that optimism, and certainly, you know,
like I said, it's very hard.
Yeah, but still, you got to try.
It is acceptable.
You got to try. I mean, we don't need something equivalent to a Rupert Murdoch controlling vast swaths of our media system. I don't think that'd be a healthy thing myself, speaking for myself. But, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Appreciate you sharing some of the thoughts on this pending legislation in the state legislature about that would prevent the Working Families Party of Connecticut from cross-endorsing other parties in elections, and then this bid by the Koch brothers to buy the Tribune Company. Leave our listeners, if you would, with the website, and we'll let you go.
Of course. ct-workingfamilies.org. And always, Scott, thank you for being Koch brother free on your...
Oh, it's Koch free. I like that. All right. Thanks, Lindsay. I look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Lindsay Farrell, Executive Director of the Connecticut Working Families Party.